Coming up today, we'll hear about the president's controversial nomination for Secretary of Labor.
Her sympathies clearly are anti-capitalist. And again, endorsed by the Communist Party of Maine, that tells us something about that.
Then Israel Wayne shed some light on what it takes to have spiritual revival in the home.
How can we expect our children to have a proper framework or understanding of the world if they are not being rooted in the fear of the Lord?
Also, M.D. Perkins talks about the legacy of AFA founder Don Wildman and the soon-to-be-released documentary, Culture Warrior.
He recognized that there was something beyond just church attendance, and the Christian life meant in your home, but it also meant in the public square.
It's the weekend of March 9th and 10th. I'm Jeff Shambly, and this is The Stand Radio. The Biden administration has nominated a radical progressive to serve as the nation's Secretary of Labor. Her name is Julie Sue. Who is she and what does she believe? Steve Jordahl with American Family News is here to help explain that. Hi, Steve.
Good morning, Jeff.
What can you tell us about Julie Sue?
Well, right now, Julie Sue is the acting Secretary of Labor. She's been that since March. She is very radically left. She was endorsed wholeheartedly by the Communist Party of Maine, if that tells you anything. She was in California doing pretty much the same thing before that. On her watch, there was some fraud and a little less than attentive is what her opponents would say. Mm-hmm. But there's a whole raft of worry about what power she would have as the Secretary of Labor and what damage she could do.
I was going to ask you about that. Give a little bit of her background. You've mentioned her service in California. What kind of impact would she have on businesses in the U.S. if she has this nomination go forward?
The Secretary of Labor has several different responsibilities, but among them are protecting workers' rights, overseeing labor laws, occupational safety, work-related rights and benefits. We've already seen the Department of Labor weaponize the occupational safety rules. We could get into that about how that happened, but all of those things are where someone who wants to weaponize their department along the lines that Joe Biden has already been doing with the rest of the government is those are probably where she'd strike.
According to the Department of Labor website, Steve, she is, quote, a nationally recognized expert on workers' rights and civil rights who has dedicated her distinguished legal career to advancing justice on behalf of poor and disenfranchised communities. All kind of buzzwords in that
what
paragraph.
What could be wrong with that?
Yeah, yeah. So what does that say about the goals of the Biden administration when business and the free market ideals are missing from these credentials?
Yeah, you've hit upon something critical there, that her sympathies clearly are anti-capitalist. Endorsed by the Communist Party of Maine. That tells us something about that. According to Mark Nolan, who wrote this at HelenAir.com, Sue is preoccupied with a Marxist ideology. He wrote, her bias against the free market is abundantly evident. She's written that by definition, corporations promote and perpetuate economic injustice and that they should be considered a public nuisance. She's the one that is going to have to be in charge of overseeing labor and business in this country. Yeah.
You know, as Christians, Stephen, we think about the worldview of what it means to have good government. You know, we go back to the words of Paul in Romans chapter 11, where God appoints authorities as ministers for our good. And we can't lose hold of that ideal, that Christian worldview, so that when we look at a president, we look at his responsibility, it should be to promote people to positions of authority that will exercise their talents for the good of the nation. And here we see something completely different.
Yeah. Leaders, God appoints and anoints leaders. The Bible's very clear that every leader of a nation or a country in this world has been appointed by God. Now, sometimes he appoints them as a judgment.
Yes.
Sometimes
he
appoints them as blessing. So, and the jury's out right now on where America stands with that. But a good ruler has the responsibility to rule and use their authority to advance godly principles. Mm-hmm. The law reflects God's character. The Ten Commandments are nothing more than a list of characters of God.
Yes.
He doesn't lie. He's faithful. All those things. And the government policies should be endorsing those same virtues under a godly government. That's what it means to honor God with our laws. And yes, the Biden administration and Julie Sue specifically are definitely going the wrong direction in that.
As of the date of this recording, her nomination is up for a vote. That's the status as of today as we're talking. AFA has put out an action alert where we are inviting and encouraging people to contact their senators to stop this nomination. And you can find out more about that at afa.net/activism. And there you will find an action alert on this individual, Julie Sue. So we are hoping that people will follow through and get involved. We can't sit on the sidelines. Steve.
No, be involved. Don't let anybody intimidate you into thinking that just because you're a Christian and you want to use your faith in the public square that that's somehow wrong or illegal or unethical. It's not. Yeah. Do it.
Thanks for stopping by, Steve.
Great to be here, Jeff. Thanks.
As we talk about the many problems facing our churches and our nation, it's good to remember that the answer ultimately doesn't depend on who we elect or how hard we work, but rather on what happens at home in our families. How do we experience the fullness of our relationship with God and with each other? Israel Wayne is with us to help point us in the right direction. He's an author and conference speaker and director of Family Renewal. He and his wife, Brooke, live in Southwest Michigan and are homeschooling parents of 11 children. Israel, welcome to the Stand Radio.
It's great to be with you, Jeff. Thank you.
You spend a lot of time in conferences talking with Christian families. Can you tell us what a spiritually healthy home would look like?
I think a spiritually healthy home is where parents recognize that it is really their responsibility to raise and disciple their children. So many parents have sort of left it up to the schools and the media and video games and entertainment, screen time to raise their children. And they've expected the church to do all the discipleship. But I think a spiritually healthy family is one where parents realize that it's actually our responsibility as parents to direct the care and guidance of our children's lives.
So what is the biblical model then of parenting? And again, Israel, you've already hinted at a lot of this, but as a concept of its own, what is a biblical model of parenting according to the scriptures?
Well, the biblical model is Deuteronomy 6. And so in Deuteronomy 6, it talks about how we're supposed to be teaching our children when we sit with them in our home or when we walk outside of our home. Really from the beginning of the day to the end of the day, we're supposed to be looking for opportunities to point them to Christ and to be able to share truth with them and share life with them.
Yeah.
And, of course, you know what we have to do in order to reflect that is to find out how can we buy back time with our children so that we can actually be with them.
You've written a book called Raising Them Up, Parenting for Christians, and you talk about parenting by grace. Talk a little bit about that concept, if you would.
Well, I think sometimes we as parents have a tendency to either not put in enough effort or to put all of the effort on ourselves as though we are entirely responsible for their outcome, right? And God doesn't hold us as parents responsible for the decisions that our adult children make, but he does hold us responsible for the input that we put into our children while they're still living in our home. So a simple way would just be to say that God holds us responsible for input, not outcomes.
Yeah.
But we have to learn how to be responsible for the input. And then we have to learn how to trust God with the outcomes and to realize that what our children really need is they need the gospel of grace. They need the gospel of Christ and not merely moralism and not merely works-based perfectionism.
And it seems to me, Israel, too, that especially for a mother, and my wife is a homeschool mom, and I think she would say that homeschooling really reveals her weaknesses to her. And so it seems that a mother really has to have or a father in the situation needs to have a strong walk with God personally before, you know, that translates into parenting. Is that right?
Well, I often say that having your children with you doesn't necessarily build godly character in your children. It more like reveals lack of character in the parent.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly.
And that's
exactly.
a good thing, right? Because it shows us our need for Christ, and we have to go to Christ and say, hey, you know, we're obviously failing our children. We're not being what we need to be for them. And sometimes we see anger and we see sin in our child's life, and we think, where did they get that? Well, oftentimes we've modeled that for them. That's they've watched us live like that. And so we really need to learn how to walk before them what we want them to become.
Speak a little bit, if you would, about the issue of Christian education, because I know that's a major pillar of what you are teaching on. Talk about that just a little bit, and the whole concept of education and how that plays into a family's discipleship of the children.
The book of Proverbs tells us that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, knowledge, and understanding. And so how can we expect our children to have a proper framework or understanding of the world if they are not being rooted in the fear of the Lord?
Yeah.
If they're being raised in an educational system that doesn't even talk about the Lord, or where God is not allowed to be included in the discussion. And so we believe it's very important for us to not disconnect our faith from all of life, but to have an integrated worldview where everything is, our faith is integrated into everything that we do.
Yeah, well, that's important. Now, when it comes to a parent who is wanting to know about maybe a problem child, and they're looking for an easy fix to that, what are some ways that parents can deal with a child that comes across as rebellious, non-compliant, or is there a certain tack that you would take to address those problems, or does it depend upon the situation?
Well, the first thing I always say is that as parents, you know, our children are the thermometer, but we're the thermostat.
Okay.
So I always want to check myself first. And I find that oftentimes when my children have bad attitudes and they're behaving badly, it's because I'm doing that. And I've set that temperature for our home. Mm-hmm. And so one of the best ways, especially for us as dads, that we can help change the emotional and spiritual temperature of our home is by changing us. So that's the first place to look. But then also, there's nothing wrong with getting professionals involved, you know, to go to our church elders, to possibly talk with a Christian counselor or therapist, to speak with parenting experts and read parenting books, right? There's a lot of great resources out there that we have, and there's no shame in tapping into people who have learned more than we have on a specific issue.
Well, you've got a lot of those resources at your website, and we'll point that out here in just a moment. I want to get to the issue of hospitality, because you mentioned that hospitality plays a role in family revival. Could you describe that for us?
One of the things that we try to teach our children to do is to learn how to love and serve other people. Mm-hmm. And so we believe that God has created us as relational beings. And again, time-wise, it's hard for us like it is for all families, but we really enjoy inviting other families over to our home and sharing a meal with them and getting to know families as families. So many people send their youth off to teen activities where the teens are away from the parents, you know, doing activities separated from the family. We like to bring all of our children and our teens together and serve other people together as a family, do work projects in our church or community as a family. We find that it binds us together and it gives us an opportunity for discipleship in the life of our child.
It seems that it would also have a sort of a practical application to a lot of the theology that you're teaching the home. It actually gives you a way to see what that looks like in the real world, doesn't it?
I think so. In fact, it's interesting that when you look at the qualifications given for church elders, one of them in the New Testament was that they had to be given to hospitality.
Okay.
I think it shows that we, you know, as men have to lead that. And sometimes we think, well, hospitality is for women, right? But the scripture says that that's something that we need to be leading as men in our homes because we lead by example, right? You can teach and instruct, but children watch what we do and they watch how we live. And that's much more is caught than taught in parenting.
Well, great advice today, Israel. Talk about your website and how people can get in touch with you and some of the resources that you offer.
So if they go to familyrenewal.org, familyrenewal.org, they can get a lot of information on practical help for parenting and marriage. There's articles, there's videos, blogs, lots of great resources. We have a web store linked from there where they can get some great resources for their family.
All right, and once again, the name of the book is Raising Them Up, Parenting for Christians. And check that out at the website familyrenewal.org. Israel Wayne, thanks so much. It's been great to talk to you today.
Thank you, brother.
Throughout the month of March, we're focusing on the life and ministry of Donald E. Wildman. He was the founder and president of American Family Association, who went to be with the Lord this past December. Long before then, American Family Studios began work on the feature-length documentary Culture Warrior, which is based on the life and legacy of Don Wildman. With me is the film's director, M.D. Perkins, who's also research fellow of church and culture here at AFA. M.D., welcome to the program.
Thanks, Jeff.
This project actually began before Brother Don's passing, Brother Don as we know him here at AFA. Tell us about that.
Yeah, in around 2018, there was a collective recognition, I think, among a number of people in the ministry that in the event that Brother Don were to pass away, what did we have ready to go out publicly? Of course, you know, you have an obituary and a press release and all that, but with a ministry like AFA that has so many different platforms, yeah. What do we have ready for radio, for magazine, and for video? And so that question lingered in our minds as we were starting to assess what kind of assets did we have for archival material. And obviously, you know, we wanted to have a quick social media video that would be ready to go that mm-hmm. kind of presented some highlights from his career and his life. But the question was, well, why don't we just make a documentary? That seems like I mean, we're the American Family Studios yeah. department. I mean, this seems like such an obvious next
step. Yeah, who else would do it?
Yeah, exactly. It's us, so it should be us.
MD, what prompted this Methodist pastor to leave local church ministry to really step into what we now know as the culture war?
Well, what's interesting about Don is I don't think he was trying to pick a fight. Mm-hmm. And I don't think he really even envisioned what he would end up doing. You know, the story goes, and, you know, it's a credible story. I don't mean it like it's a legend or a myth or anything, but Don was sitting down with his family mm-hmm. in December of 1976 to watch television one night and turned it on. And, of course, you only had the three network stations at that point. And on one station, there was a scene of violence. On another scene channel, there was a scene of sexuality. In another, there was profanity. Mm-hmm. And he just turned it off. And, you know, according to his children, you know, he sat there in the room in his armchair for a while. They could tell that he wasn't mad or angry at them, but there was something really bothering him.
Okay.
And after that point, he began to do some research into the effects of television on individuals and on society. Mm-hmm. There were a lot of researchers within the secular world that were starting to ask these kinds of questions. You know, you'd had two, three decades of television now mm-hmm. starting to become more and more mainstream. And he began to sense that there was something that Christians really had missed. Mm-hmm. And he felt that for himself, too, that he had missed something and that he had been complacent and hadn't really noticed, I guess, the decline in morals, in the way that Christians were depicted, in kind of the overall, you know, kind of just assume, well, we just live in a Christian nation and we live in this Christian-influenced society, but realized that there had been this huge erosion that had taken place mm-hmm. In the time that he had been a pastor and been active, you know, in local ministry. And that bothered him. And so that's when he started to turn the television off week, just within his local congregation. But then that springboarded into him leaving the local pastorate and then starting the National Federation for Decency, which would change his name to American Family Association in 1988.
Yeah, we should mention that your interview in the March issue of The Stand magazine is outstanding. And if people want to get into the nuts and bolts of exactly what Brother Don did, that would be the place to go. But I want to ask you about something. One of the key moments for me in the film, and I did watch a rough cut of the film, was a statement that he made where he said that the battle is over more than dirty words on a screen. It's about Western civilization itself. Now, nobody was talking about Western civilization being at risk in those days. Where did he get that kind of insight?
Well, I think Don was incredibly intelligent and began to put the pieces together as he was... That's kind of the thing that I've come to appreciate about Don and his approach is that he wasn't satisfied with the surface answers that were there or the pat answers that people would give. He wanted to dig a little bit deeper. And when he kept confronting the issues of television and just the recalcitrant stance that that the network executives would have, and then their vehemence over mm-hmm. his opposition to them when they're trying to make it seem like, well, this is a freedom of choice issue. Well, if it's a freedom of choice issue, then why don't I have a choice to complain and make my case on this? You know, but so I think he began to put the pieces together, and the thread that he kept finding as it related to abortion, as it related to pornography, as it related to the beginnings of the homosexual rights movement right. and all of these different things, was the thread of secular humanism, this religious ideology that masks itself as a non-religious ideology that's just, you know, this is just the way that people think, and they could wrap it up in kind of, you know, American democracy kind of language. But really there's this, there's a deeper spiritual issue that's underneath the surface there. And so for him to see that there was a threat on Western civilization, you know, I know he read some Francis Schaeffer, and Francis okay. Schaeffer did do some writing on this, you know, a little bit before this. But I think Don came to his ideas on this separately from Schaeffer, and just ended up presenting some of Schaeffer's material as he, you know, became more confident in this. But I know Don was, and it actually took him several years before he would admit that too, you know, because he said, you know, there were some people who were talking about humanism, and he didn't want to use that term at first. But the more that he started to see, he needed a term to really define what was this secular ideology that was underneath everything, that seemed to come to the same conclusions about life, about activism, about how Christians, you know, how people should live in society, and what the church's role in that should be, you know, as kind of this distant separation of church and state. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't really have a say. You can just act individually, but the church shouldn't make any public declarations, that kind of thing. He began to define it more and more in terms of secular humanism. And when he started to do that, I think he saw the bigger picture, that Western civilization actually was at stake. Because why were all of these different parties seemingly so unified in their philosophy of life?
Yeah.
And that's what he boiled it down to, was the Christian view of man. That was what was being eroded, was this understanding that humans had dignity, value, and worth because they were created by an almighty creator.
Yeah.
And therefore, there were all of these repercussions of that in society and morality and all of these other things.
What was it, MD, that caused this man, in terms of his character, to be someone who was willing to take the heat? I mean, he could have walked out at any time, and I've heard him say he really wasn't looking for this. What was it about his character that really enabled him to stand up to that kind of opposition?
One of the things that his critics would often accuse him of is just trying to get into the spotlight. But for Don, from everything that I've read of him and from what I've understood from others who knew him more personally, Don wasn't somebody who was seeking attention, but he knew the power of the spotlight and that what that could draw to the issues that he wanted to bring forth, and how that would raise awareness among people who were just kind of sitting by complacently. And so I think, you know, there's certainly personality issues that are there. I mean, Don was a hard worker, but he also had very thick skin. He wasn't afraid of a fight. He wasn't afraid of confrontation. And I think a lot of people are and were. And so for him to be willing to, the way that he described it is, if I'm a monkey, they can't make one out of me, but I'm not going to let them make one out of me. You know, that was the way that he thought about things. It's just, you know, if I am able to accurately explain my case, and I can trust that the people can decipher what is truth and what is error, and maybe my voice gets heard in the mix of everything else, and I don't have to, even though the media filter is against me and so many of these other forces are against me, if I at least have the opportunity to make my case, I think wise, intelligent people can think for themselves and understand what's actually going on. Mm-hmm. And the fact that he was willing to just stand up and say it, you know, the courage and the boldness to do that. There's also the aspect of his God-given call.
Yeah.
And I think that's underneath it too.
Mm. As the director of the film Culture Warrior, what do you hope people will come away with when they see the film?
I hope people, when they see Culture Warrior, they recognize that we don't need to get too comfortable as believers to just kind of sit back and feel like we've done all that we need to if we go to church and we kind of feel like we're lightly engaging in society in certain ways. I mean, I think for Don, he recognized that there was something beyond just church attendance, that there was living the Christian life. And the Christian life meant in your home, but it also meant in the public square. Mm-hmm. It meant that in your workplace that you were acting a certain way and living out certain ideals and values. But then when you were having conversations about politics or society and culture, that your Christian understanding of the world shaped the way that you understood that. And Christians have been increasingly marginalized into made to think that our opinions and our understanding of things has no value because we're just the idiots out here who believe that God actually speaks to us through a book or something. Whereas for Don, it's like God has spoken to us and he's given us a calling and we know that we have the Holy Spirit inside of us. So we really don't have any reason to fear what others might say about us or think about us in these situations. So, you know, my desire with the documentary is that we would that Christians who watch it would feel empowered and also recognize some of the history behind how we've gotten here, because it's so easy to forget, especially if you've lived through parts of this history at certain points. You know, you start to watch it and you realize, wow, like things didn't just get bad, you know, 10 years ago. I mean, you're talking about pornography in society in the 70s and 80s, and now we live with the repercussions of the mode of that pornography coming to people has changed through through internet and being digital. But the impact of society, even now secular people are starting to realize the negative impacts of internet pornography on society. But Don was realizing that before it was the internet.
Absolutely.
You know, so, you know, just kind of recognizing the bigger picture of how we got here so that you can appreciate the stands that men like Don and others have taken. And then find ways to stand up for yourself, because Don's whole point of this is that you don't have to be him, but God has called you to do something, and you can be faithful where you are, whatever that looks like, however God's laying that on your heart, you can be faithful where you are.
Yeah, it's a good word. Now, when's the film going to be available?
The film is going to be released later in 2024, sometime between the fall and the end of the year. We don't have an exact date yet, but it will be later this year.
I can't wait to see the final version.
Good.
MD, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you, Jeff.
Next week, we'll find out what it's like to share the gospel in Romania. We'll talk to a husband and wife missionary team who have a ministry of street evangelism and are training a younger generation of Romanian believers to share their faith. We'll hear about the challenges and the ways the Lord is moving in that country. Today's program is available as a podcast at afr.net. And for important articles on culture, faith, and family, get your free 6-month subscription to The Stand magazine by going to afa.net/thestand. I'm Jeff Shambly. Thanks for listening. We look forward to being with you again next time here on The Stand Radio.